It's like a direct connection.
It hit the spot exactly. It's the best I could do. But I want to speak about something that I think is a lost art. Oh my gosh, Bishmos. Can I trouble you? Could you give me a Mikroslo Shmos instead of Bracious? I take Bracious. I got over there, in the section over there. Many of our... I wish... Oh, I shouldn't spare. Wait for Shlomo. Shmos this time of year. Can you get a Shmos Makros Gadolos? Anyone see any Shmos lying around? Truth is, I don't need a Chumash and Rashi. Just give me the Chumash and Rashi. Shlomo, just give me that. I have. I realize it's just a Rashi. Thank you. I realize it's a Rashi, so I just did a Chumash and Rashi. Okay, so I had the great advantage of being trained as a division head in Magen Av by a very, very tough boss. A very tough boss, Rabbi Steinhardt. Ended up being my father-in-law, but he was a tough boss before he was my father-in-law, before there were any Havamidas. He was so tough, but in the end of days, if you were able to make it under his scrutiny, you had it pretty good. He was makrid on with so many things, and there were no excuses. If you messed up, you messed up. Just to say, if Shacharis was called for 7:30, they had to have a lineup at 7:20, and at 7:20, all the bunks had to be lined up outside the shul, and then you had to... You know, when every bunk was there, because you had to also always keep tabs on the bunks, make sure the campers were accounted for. The only way to do this is to constantly have these lineups, roll calls, like they did in the Army. So before Shacharis used to have a lineup, and before lunch they had a lineup, and before Mincha there was a lineup, and there was no lineup for supper. But you're always supposed to be counting, make sure everyone's there. The counselors had to be constantly checking to make sure everyone's there. It was like... in your blood, you had to always make sure everyone's there. I remember as a counselor, once I happened to wake up at 5:30 in the morning, I heard kids talking, and I looked around, I see one kid. Kids were talking, one kid's not there. I said, "Where's Elliot?" And they said, "Do we have to tell?" It was 5:30 in the morning. So they said, yeah, I got out of bed. I was on the top bunk bed. I got off. I was the counselor on the top bunk bed, just... A note for those people who have been in camp and say, "A counselor gets a single bed." I had a kid sleeping underneath me. Gave him the bottom bunk bed. I slept on the top. And yes, you have to tell. He ran away. He ran away from camp. He wanted to go home. Camp wanted to go home. Those days, you couldn't call home. He ran away. What? Yeah, he was talking and he went to the road and about 40 minutes ago. So... quickly got dressed. I ran to Rabbi Steinhardt's bungalow, knocked on his door, and I said, "Rabbi Steinhardt, Mordechai Palgan, I have a camper missing, and his friends say he ran away from camp, and he's off campgrounds, which is an emergency. Like, he'd probably be Michal Shabbos for a 12-year-old that left by himself. And it wasn't Shabbos." So he said, "Did you check the bathroom?" So I said, it was my first year as a counselor, I said, "Rabbi Steinhardt, do you think I'm crazy to wake you up at 5:30 in the morning without having checked the bathrooms first?" Of course I checked the bathroom. Now, I woke him up. It happens to be that my mother-in-law at the time was in New York. She was expecting Dovi Teichman's mother. He was there by himself. He got out. We ended up calling the police. And he was eventually found. And for those of you that know Camp Mungo Never Ever, in Kanyanga Lake, where he called, he walked. No, he hitched a ride halfway there with a truck driver who dropped him off in Kanyanga Lake, and he called his mother at 6 in the morning, which was 7 city time. And then they called the camp, and the police picked him up and brought him back to camp. But I got a lot of honorable mention for, like, every time you look at your kids, you always have to be counting them. Is everyone there? Ultimately, a mechanech has to, safety is always going to be first. So you're always counting kids. You always have to, and it happens where there are a lot of things that just need perfection, and perfection means it has to be done right every day, all the time, without exception. So I was telling you, so we used to line these kids up. When we started the, I feel all those people who don't know Mungo Never Ever, you never in Mungo Never Ever, were you? Shmuel Chaim, were you ever in Mungo Never Ever? Your father was, you were, and you were. So the people that know it, it's even better. So when they started this new division, they got new bunks, and they made for older kids this new division, which is now, what's it called? The upper senior, the older, what's it called? Huh?
Marom,
yeah. Marom division, so across the road. So, you know, they're teenagers, and you know, they were for older kids, and they weren't getting there when I was supposed to get there. I was so scared that the kids weren't there that I used to do my was in the shul with this tefillin chazan on. He would be watching the kids coming in with their counselor leading the front, and I was scared that kids wouldn't be there. You couldn't let a kid into the shul without his whole bunk there. That was the only way you keep track of them. The whole bunk couldn't go in until the whole bunk was there. So they didn't get there until Shemoneh Esrei. You had to stay outside until they were there. So that was like a built-in accountability. I was the one who was going to be put on the flames if they weren't there. I was a division head. So I had to be Tovia the counselors. They weren't there. It's the counselors' fault. So I have to go be Tovia the counselors, which many principals make the mistake. They think that they're in charge of all the kids. The principal's job is to supervise the staff, the rebbeim and teachers. That's his job. A division head's job is to supervise the counselors. A head counselor's job is to supervise the division heads. That's it. The reshiva's job is to supervise the principals. Okay, now, it could be the reshiva also has another job. He's also a rebbe, so he also has a job to supervise those talmidim. Okay, if he has two jobs, sometimes you have two jobs, but, you know, right now I'm not giving a shir. I know my job. My job, I'm supervising all the principals. But we have principals who are not educated, not in the educational. I'm also supervising the non-educational principals. We have a bunch of those too. But you have to know what your main job is. Anyway, at the time I was division, and I'm supposed to supervise the counselors. How does it look for me if only three kids in the bunk are there? It means counselors doing a bad job. Whose fault is that? Well, if the kid doesn't do what he's supposed to do, whose job is it? Counselors. So the counselor looks bad. So I'm only going to look bad. If the kids aren't there, it means the counselor doing his job. Head counselor only comes over to me. He doesn't talk to the division. He doesn't talk to the counselor. Only talks to me. Arshtanet was known to say a few words to the counselor too, but the division head used to hear it. He did it very privately. I didn't want to be, so to speak, called out on it. So what I would do is when every 8 kids came, whichever counselor was there, I said, okay, stand in front of the line, just walk in. But my only 2 kids in my bunk here, so just go in. Just go in. That's how scared we were of Rabbi Steinhardt. That every time there were 8 kids there, I sent a different counselor in with the 8 kids. And, you know, by Baruch Hu, the last counselor was there with his 8 kids and everyone got in. But that's how stark he was. So I want to relate it to something that we implemented recently in Yeshiva, which is a very good chinuch lesson. Let's start with this word. I don't know if it directly reflects it, but I was trying to think of something that in offhand. So in the parsha, it says that Vayishma Yisro. This is this Rashi, the first Rashi, Vayishma Yisro. So Rashi, yes, Mashmu Shamo Ba. What did Yisro hear that made him come? And Rashi, yes, is Kriyas Yamsuf and Mechem Samalik. Those two things, Kriyas Yamsuf and the war with the Malik. He heard about those two things that Hashem did for my Israel, and he came. So the big kasha is the obvious kasha. I think everyone has like Why these two? What is it about the mini Nissan happen? The Saramakas, Kriyas Yamsuf, Kriyas Yamsuf, Lechemus HaMolek, like what are these two? Now, this is not Mokhruf. I heard this such a beautiful Vart. If it was ever a Vart that's not Mokhruf, that maybe is Emes, this would be one of them, in my opinion. So I heard the Shamer of Bik. It was a big Tamachal, Tamir Moshe, who was a Rav in Borough Park. He said that Kriyas Yamsuf was the biggest nace. Of all the Nisim, was the biggest nace. And then shortly thereafter, there was this Milchemes Amalek. How could Amalek attack? Amalek also heard about the nace. Like, you don't mess with someone who could split the sea. There's no mess. And yet, days afterwards, Amalek attacked. It was just days afterwards. When Yisro saw that, days after the biggest miracle, change of the natural rules of nature, and someone could go ahead and attack Yisrael, Yisro realized that, even the greatest of miracles, which was part of Rabbi Naaman's Shmuz on Shabbos, the greatest miracles eventually dissipate. And he dehared Yisro that the same thing's going to happen to him. If you don't take and implement and do something immediately, the same thing's going to happen to you. Whatever inspiration you have, it's good to get inspiration. Sometimes it's good to get inspiration even from miracle type things. But if you don't do anything to make a change, you're going to end up the same way. You'll be in the Chamas HaMalek. You'll also attack, and it won't mean anything. They just totally, trampled all over the Kriyas Yamsuf, and they attacked. So Yisro said, I better go do something. And that's why he came to join Yisrael. Not bad. Although there are other pshatim, so I can't say it's mukhuk. But so there are a lot of things that happen that, I don't think it's a good application. It's a good word. I probably just looking for an excuse to say that word. There are a lot of things that happen. So I want to bring up one thing that is important, that there needs to be a lot of consistency on things. So let's say you have, you want to, we started this minion from ninth grade. Some of you are zochet to see the minion. And what's required to have a tzura of a minion, whatever's going on in that minion, I just want to point out to you the details details of creating that environment. Maybe one day you'll be a principal or a division head, and if you have your own minions, like, it could be a disaster. Minyanim are very difficult to run, but there are a lot of pieces to this puzzle. Hours and hours of meeting went into this minion. First of all, does everyone know where to sit? Who's going to enforce that they have to sit there? Do you know what 14-year-olds, you know what that could be like? Like, take for granted that it's run, but there are so many pieces to that. We had to, first of all, buy tables. We had to get a custodian to go in every night to make sure that the tables look clean, straightened, the chairs straightened out. There are enough chairs for every Talmud that they're assigned to sit there, that there is a Menahel in charge of the Rebbeim. Don't forget, so at that minion, I play Menahel, but I don't overstep my bounds because I'm not the principal. But I play Menahel, like I'll be being in charge of the Rebbeim. That much I do. I won't speak to the kids, I will speak to the Rebbeim. The Rebbeim have to do their job. The Rebbeim have to enforce that the boys are not sitting in the back, going to the back classroom, are leaving, are coming, are talking. I won't say anything to a kid, unless it's like totally out of control, but it's now 6 months into it. Maybe one time I said something to a kid, but I will say something to a Rebbe privately. Is there anything to do about the talking? But even that really hasn't happened. So first of all, setting the tune has to be consistent. They have to come and they have to know they have to sit there. There has to be a Rebbe there. What about by Mincha Maariv? Are you implementing the same rules by Mincha Maariv? Like Shacharis, you have to be makbar on Mincha too and Maariv too. Otherwise, to a kid doesn't understand, like, why is chakras different than mincha or mar? So by mincha, when you say you're going to start, you have to start then. The rebbeim have to come and be there on time. They have to speak over to the kids. The kids have to sit in the same place they sat by chakras, mincha, marav. Marav is the hardest minyan in the yeshiva. I had a little difference of opinion with Rabbi Luban when Rabbi Luban came to the yeshiva. So when Rabbi Grunblatt was here, who was the principal that I was trained by, so when they changed the clock in October, so the yeshiva ended at 6:15, and how can you have a marv at 6:15? There's no rebbeim here. How can you have a marv with the whole yeshiva at 6:15? The base manish that all the kids sat used to David in wasn't available because the base manish was here. And there's no one here to supervise them. So we didn't have any marv. I went home at 6:15. Rabbi Lubin came and said, how can you not daven at 6:15 before they go home? So I said, it's going to be a disaster, that minyan, for marv. He said he feels it's a chilul Hashem for a yeshiva to dismiss when there's a zman tefillah, to dismiss them without davening is a chilul Hashem. Shows them it's not chashuv. So a yeshiva is required, Rabbi Lubin felt, I wasn't Rashiva then, so he was my boss. So a yeshiva is required to, once you dismiss at a zman tefillah, you have to daven. Let's say you have a retreat, and the retreat ends, let's say, at 7 a.m. You cannot dismiss at 7 a.m. Okay, everyone go to shul. You have to daven. You cannot dismiss by a zman tefillah without davening. There's a learn-a-thon that goes 5 hours. It's a chilul Hashem to dismiss without davening marav. If you have a Lag BaOmer trip and it's 6 o'clock, everyone's tired, exhausted. It's a chilul Hashem to dismiss without davening marav. I told Rabbi Lubin, it will be a disaster. Okay, so not everyone will come. They'll come. But you have to have the minyan. Some people won't come, they won't come, but the yeshiva daven. So we did that, but it was always gnawing at me that the chinuch of it, like, we didn't have in the old building. I remember when Lubin started, the old building, we had diamond, the dining room was never cleaned up. We had no custodian. The dining was a mess. And we had to bring siddurim every day in there, and nobody would come. And so when we started this minyan with the ninth grade, I felt, okay, now I'm going to do it right. We have to have someone to advise. The rebbeim leave at 5. How can I ask the rebbeim to come back at 6:15? It's very hard. Mondays and Wednesdays, Tuesdays and Thursdays, they have a mishmar. So that's why we daven. That's why we daven marv at 8 o'clock. Because can't dismiss, and the rebbeim have to daven there with them. Some rebbeim are better at it. Some rebbeim were trained in Maganav. The ones who were trained in Maganav, they know how to run a tight ship, and you know, they're minyan are better. You know which ones they are. If you went to this high school, you know which rebbeim's marv at 8 o'clock was a kovadik minyan, and some. You know, we're not as, because they just do it, the rebbeim really aren't trained how to be consistent. But for this ninth grade minyan for marav, I took upon myself that I will be at every Monday and Wednesday marav. I couldn't ask the rebbeim to come. At the first marav, I asked a special favor from all the rebbeim, even though they left at five, I asked all of them to do me a personal favor and to please come back at 6:15 for that one. I went over to each one of them individually. I asked a special favor, and the one or two times that I couldn't be here because I was out of town or whatever, I made sure to have someone there. I asked one of their band if they couldn't do it. I called Rabbi Neumann. I asked Rabbi Neumann to daven, and then to daven at that minyan. But it has to, like, they have to have. You could tell a substitute comes into a class. You can tell if you're a sub in a class. You can tell which classrooms are run efficiently because the substitute comes in. All the kids are sitting in their seats. If the classrooms run efficiently, you know, it can't be like substitute comes, yeah. And the Rebbe is very, you know, inefficient and doesn't follow up on routines and is not very consistent. So then it's going to be out of control. But if you have a teacher, a Rebbe, who is very consistent, so, and that's a very big requirement, consistency. Kids need consistency. So if that Mara would be like, you know, just come, and they don't have to wear hats and no one's being mocked with on hats and jackets. and no one's being makbid on where they sit, and no one's being makbid that they come on time, so then that's going to spill over to shakas. Like, why, you know, just because you're here now, so you're being makbid, so don't come. And I, like, yeah, if you cared that much, like, yes, you have to be consistent. So, and I don't even think there has to be any consequence. I didn't even speak about consequences. The consequence is you need to be here on time. It's very simple as that. And the attendance is not perfect, but it's closer to perfect. The percentage is very, very high. The ninth grade minute. Huh? Let them try. Let them try saying that. Rebbe, it's a very hard time for me to daven at 6:15. I'd rather go home, do my eat supper, take a shower, relax, and then get dressed and go to the 10 o'clock minyan at the kolo. The honest truth is, if a kid really said that, I would be open to letting him do that. I would be open to him.
Does it make a difference if you think he's not going to daven?
There's a maisa which is equally as important, but a little different topic, but I'm going to mention it. This I heard from Rabbi Foreman. Rebbe asked at the Torah Mesorah Convention to the Vod of Novominsky Rebbe and Shmuel Kamenetsky, I forgot who the third one was, that I am a Rebbe of a fourth grade class, and we daven shakras together in the classroom, and one kid says he davened, but he didn't daven. He always says he davened. What do I do with a kid? He's telling me he davened already. So Shmuel Kamenetsky said, if a kid says he davened, he davened. And the Rebbe, thinking that Rishmuel maybe did not understand the question 100%, said, no, I want to make sure it's clear to the Rosh Hashiva. I know for, it's not like I think he didn't daven. I happen to know that family. I know for a fact he didn't daven. What should I do? Meaning, like, you didn't probably didn't understand my question. You know, so then, now I'm mimicking Rabbi Foreman, who mimicked Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky. So, and Rabbi Shmuel answered, I don't care. Quote, I don't care. This is a very important yesod. A kid who says something, if you tell a kid that he's lying, you're teaching him to be a shakran.
This is Rabbi Shmuel talking.
Yeah. If you tell a kid, if you say he davened, you tell a kid if you say it happened, then okay, and he davened, then you're teaching a kid to be a Baal Emes. It's a very big Kiddush. It's counterintuitive. And there was I forgot what the specific Shaila was in the Chinuch Roundtable this week, that I wanted to write this story in, which would have answered the question. But a kid who says he davened already, was going to daven, or he goes out to daven, you know, you have to believe him. Now, it doesn't mean I have to give him the shush to go. And I think it's very equally important that once you make exceptions, you don't have to make exceptions. Listen, I would love to let you go, but once I let one person go, there won't be a minyan for Marv. Everybody wants to go home and eat supper. That's the schedule. We dive in Marv first. So I'm so sorry. If there's a special event going on in your life that you need to make an exception, you know, bring it all from home. Of course, there are exceptions could be made. But on the whole, we want everyone to dive in there. That's usually enough. We have one kid who can't daven. He can't daven shachas either. He can't daven mincha. He doesn't even know how to read, I don't think. And he wants to leave it, you know, at 6:15 he comes in, we let him leave, but he can't. Everyone knows he can't. Then we make an exception and goes, one kid, you know, he's into speed reading. So he comes in, we start at 6:18. We give 3 minutes from the end of class to get your hat and jacket and start. And he gets there 6:16, and when he comes, that's when he starts. So, Rebbe, I'm Dami Marv, after school, in the Yeshiva Minyan, but when I finish, I'm leaving. So when I get there, he's usually up to, like, you know, Hashkivenu, and he just davens. By the time we start Shmoneh Esrei, he's like out the door. I don't say anything. Everyone knows, you know. He comes in with his, you know, bicycle helmet on, and he's like eccentric. Okay, you know, everyone knows kids are eccentric. You have to maneuver a little bit. You know, it's not good to have fights with kids, but also you don't want them to daven out of feeling like it's a chore. Inspire them, and every day there's a marav. Every day that there's a marav, I always by mincha remind everyone that have a great rest of the day. I will see you by marav. Make sure you're here on time, please, so we can start right on time.
For not punishing them for not coming, he says, "I don't want
to
come."
There could be consequences. Happens to be there isn't consequences, and you know, right now the attendance at that minion is approximately 80-85%. And the ones who aren't coming are really not coming to Shachris Minch either. They can't handle. So there's a little bit of a revolving door there, for those of you who have davened there.
But
it's a shtickle for ninth grade. There's some kids who are not holding by davening.
Really,
it's tefillahs of Avodah Shebelev.
Forcing it.
I didn't say force.
But I'm saying like...
Enforcing, I said.
Right.
Enforce the rules. Most kids are obedient.
But
they want to comply with what the standards are. So if that's what the standard is, everyone's doing that.
When for a kid with resistance...
You have to deal with it differently.
Enforcing it... Right. So how would Rebbe... It would kind of lead him
but
to...
But I don't mind discussing it. But you just know we're discussing the 10% or 15% instead of the 85%. So could you put on the agenda for the next VAD to discuss the 10-15%, because often people get, you know, they miss God because they worry about the 10%, 50%, and it's a mistake. You have to worry about the 85% first. Know what you want, and it's a Gemara. It's a Gemara skill that you find the one case where the rule doesn't work for, and now you have a kasher. Doesn't work for that because the rules have to be work for everything. So this doesn't work for everything. You're right. There's 10-15%, which I'm masking. You have to have a plan for. But the outside the box ideas are worthy. But I think that's a good topic for the next, but specifically for davening. There are a lot of good ideas that we should discuss. But specifically for here, the 85%, most kids just want to do what is expected of them. Most kids, okay, it's time for Marv, down Marv. Like, they're not challenging the rule of Marv. They'll come on time, they'll come. They have a couple of kids who are on medication. Who it runs out by 5:30. They can't. They mamash can't. So you have to look the other way a little bit. And the kids know without saying it. They know which kids can't. They're not a kasher. They know better than you do. So you don't have to fight with them. No, you have to be there. Hey, maybe the kid can't be there. They could, but even that sometimes sitting is the hardest thing. They can't sit. There's one kid, every Marv, he comes in, he walks out, he walks in, he walks out. By the time we're up to Shema, he never comes back. That's like a lot for him. He comes in he wants to, but he can't even sit down. That's how much his medication, and you don't attempt any medication again, he won't sleep all night. Because it'll be so jittered up. It's not worth taking another dose just for a marav. It's just not worth it. Ruins their appetite, ruins their sleep ability, medication. Medication is very big. And the parents who have agreed to have their kids on medication, it's a very big thing. Think about it. Like, you know, most people don't take any medication. Right? You hear someone taking a lot of medication, there's something wrong with them. The kids themselves are placed with their mind. Like, oh, I'm messed up. I have to take medication. The kids themselves feel it, which is very bad. It takes a lot of maturity, and you need sometimes you need some therapy just to tell the kid that, no, it's good to take medication. It's make you better. Everyone's differently. It's true. It's not a big deal to take medication, but if a kid thinks he's taking medication, it's very, very bad. I remember, I hope I'm not getting into my rule of going outside the 10%, but we had a kid once who was taking growth hormones. I was teaching eighth grade that year. Taking growth hormones. He was so embarrassed that he was taking medication. Nobody could find out about it. So we were going on this big trip. One of my big trips to Atlanta, I used to do with the eighth grader. We started the Learnathon. We raised money for that Atlanta trip. The Learnathon started. And one kid says, he's not going. No, I'm not going. Couldn't figure out. He called his mother. He said, no, he doesn't want to go. Do you know why? I'll tell you, Rabbi, please don't tell him I told you. He's very embarrassed. He takes his growth hormones, you know, injections, and he gives them himself, but he's very embarrassed if people find out. So, oh, that's ridiculous. He'll give it to himself over there. No one's going to know. He can stay in a home with another friend. He'll keep it in the refrigerator, tell the parent he has medication, and privately he'll just give it to himself. What's the big deal? So mom says, do you mind if I handle this? Do you mind? He says, yeah, but you're not going to tell him I told you, right? He said, no, I won't tell him I told you, but do me a favor, please. Can we make a deal? If he challenges you and says that you told Rabbi Palgon, just deny it. Because I will never, ever tell him that you told me. But if he challenges you, just tell him. Because I will not tell him. If I ever tell him I tell you, I will tell you first. I will not tell him. But if he asks you, just deny it. Because you didn't. Okay, fine. That was the deal we made. So I went over to the kid. And I said, I was thinking about it. I think I know why you're not going on the trip. He said, why? I said, it's a little bit embarrassing. I don't want to mean to embarrass you, but that could be the only reason I could think of not going on such an overnight trip from Thursday to Monday. And we're going to Six Flags over Georgia. Eighth grade and not going on such a trip. Like, I figured out what it must be. He goes, Rebbe, what? What? What is it? Like, he thought I knew. Hey, I won't tell anyone, but I know what it is. He goes, what is it? You have a problem bedwetting? The kid's jaw dropped. He says, no. I said, come on. You could tell me. I won't tell anyone. No. You don't have to tell me. So don't tell me. He goes, Rebbe, I'll tell you what it is. It's not that. He goes, what is it? He goes, I'm taking growth hormones. So why aren't you coming? What's the big deal? There are four kids in the class taking growth hormones. He goes, there are? He goes, yeah, I can't tell you who they are, but okay, what's the big deal?
Did Rebbe make that
put
up
it in there? No, there were other kids taking. He said, what's the big deal? You just keep in the refrigerator. No one has to know. What is the big deal? He says, okay. Kid comes home that night. He says, Ma, did you tell Rabbi? You told Rabbi Palgon I'm taking growth hormones. Mother calls me up. He says, Rabbi, did you tell him that I told you? I said, no, I did not. He says, then why is he asking me? I said, he told me. So I told the mother. I told the kid that I know what it is. He has bedwetting issues. And he thought that was so horrendous that he actually thought the growth hormones was much better. So I conned the kid into telling me, and then he came.
Well, you didn't think that his mother told you.
Because he's not stupid. You know, he tried. He tried. So you have to be a little outsmart them sometimes. You know, sometimes like you're enforcing a kid to do something, but you know, you have to outsmart them. That's why you're older. You know, you got to be outside the box, and you got to think of ways into, you know, is it manipulating them? Not manipulating them. Of course he needed to go on the trip, but he didn't deserve to be embarrassed about it. I couldn't tell him, no, you won't be embarrassed. He wouldn't believe me. Every time I tell him, don't worry, you won't be embarrassed. I found something that was so humiliating that he, okay.